To give us a glimpse into the musical landscape of the early 20th century, violinist Elizabeth Chang is releasing a new album called Sonatas and Myths, and she's here to share some of the history and imagination, as well as personal interest in works by Bartok, Szymanowski, and Dohnányi. So let me start by saying hello to you, Elizabeth, and how glad I am to have you here.
I'm very glad to be here.
So you have recorded this fascinating triptych of works that are interconnected in various ways. If you could just walk us through your thought process when you were planning and preparing for the album recording.
Right. So my life is a combination of performing, teaching, and working as a arts administrator. And so when I have the opportunity to do a performance project like this, which was also partly thanks to a grant from my university, it really gives me a chance to explore something that I feel very connected to on a personal level. And that was the case with this album. First of all, the period itself is of great interest to me because these three works were all composed within a decade of each other, 1912 to 1921. Particularly a very turbulent time. These three composers were three of quite a few who were struggling to find a new expressive identity in that time period and sort of taking in what it means to be in the modern world and absorbing what World War I meant to them. It very, very much affected their lives on the trajectory of where they were in the world and their artistic how they sort of processed this artistically was of great interest to me and seems like also something that would continue to be sort of analogous to our times as artists. We try to figure out what our place is and what our role is with these big world events happening around us. On a personal level, also, because my life is very connected to teaching, I spend a lot of time thinking about my own artistic and violinistic heritage. And I studied with some really, really wonderful pedagogues, two of whom were students of Carl Flesch. So this would be Roman Totenberg and Max Rostall. They were both students of the Hungarian pedagogue Carl Flesch, who is very well known to this day to students nowadays, both because of his scale method and also the books he wrote about violin technique. So Dohnányi was involved in rescuing Flesch in World War II. So that there's actually quite a personal connection there.
How did you go about researching your artistic heritage? Was that something that you just talked about with your direct teachers, or was there further research involved in that too?
It's not something they talked about very explicitly. I mean, they referred to Flesch. I was aware that he was just there in the background as this very prominent person who sort of shaped the way people were thinking about teaching at that time. But no, this was something I came to much later because my interest in teaching actually came much later in life.
Yeah. And I'm curious about that scale method you mentioned too. I come from a background of piano and know very little about the string world. So what is Flesch's scale technique that you mentioned?
Well, it's one of several systems, but it's actually one of the most widely used. It's just kind of an encyclopedia of how to practice scales laid out in every key, and it's very conveniently and somewhat exhaustively. And it really, I think that is something that my students and many students use daily.
If you could give us an overview of the album Sonatas and Myths and from the large body of works that these composers have, why these particular pieces?
Well, I think that each of them represents a very particular and distinct voice in contrast to each other, to one another. So they, I think that the Dohnányi Sonata is really in the romantic tradition. It's not wildly different from what from the language you'll hear from, you know, Brahms or Schumann or late romantics. And Szymanowski was very much seeking his own voice. I mean, there are echoes of Frenchness in his music. The myths, he very deliberately goes to these classical stories, is in Greek classical stories to for inspiration, and the music is very evocative. He uses a lot of effects that aren't necessarily the, I mean, they're not wildly unusual on the violin, but they're, but to have so many of them sort of strung together is maybe wasn't the norm, let's just put it that way, at the time. And then Bartok, although we know him for his ethnographic research and the folk music, there's just a taste of that in this music. But it's not in your face so much, but this is very much a sort of modernist aesthetic. And I think my colleague David Schneider in the liner notes talks about how it was one of the first performances in a salon with Szymanowski and all many of the big name, Ravel and Stravinsky in Paris. And so you have a sense for what a cauldron of musical creativity and innovation it was at that time in that place. And I was hoping that the juxtaposition of these three works would give a little bit of a taste of what was going on.
Let's go back to the myths, the Szymanowski myths, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, everyone loves a good story. Sharing some of the stories that he chose to portray through his music in that piece.
The first movement is called the Fountain of Arethusa, and it refers to a spring in Syracuse, on the Sicilian island of Ortigia. And so Arethusa is being pursued by the river god Alpheus and turns into the water of a spring in order to escape. The second myth is Narcissus, which I think is maybe a little more familiar. This is a beautiful young man who falls in love with his own reflection, and the music has this sort of stillness and reflective quality to it, mirroring kind of motives that you can listen for. And Dryads and Pan is not a specific story, but more sort of a evocative picture of these characters in Greek mythology. So, and you hear it through these harmonics. There are these glissandi that happen in the last movement that are supposed to be Pan's flute.
Would you say, after having recorded the album, that you feel at all differently about the music than you did before? Was there something that you learned about it in the process of recording?
The thing is that as I, it's now a few months away from the recording process, and I actually feel like I want to stay with this time period a little bit and go a little farther with it. It's not, I think it's deepened my interest more. And I also have found some personal connections to that time. I have I mean, besides through my teachers, my family was, the child of immigrants from China, but my father's family spent a lot of time in France, and some of my half aunts were very involved in the visual arts, and there was a real connection to that time period. And it turns out that my grandfather had a shop that was in the same building, or we haven't quite worked out whether it's the same building or this next door to Durand, the publisher, which is where many of the great French composers had their work published, and that Ravel probably walked by his shop on a few times a week. And so just I'm starting to feel very close, even closer to this time period, and wanting to just go a little deeper yet.
Dare to dream with me for a second, Elizabeth. If we were to go out 100 years and we were to look back on our current era, what do you predict would be some of the things we'd perceive as the artistic legacy of the early 21st century?
I think about that in some of my other roles quite a lot. In fact, right now I'm working with two of three, or is it four? Four of my colleagues on organizing the Five College New Music Festival. UMass is one of, it's in the Valley with Smith College and Amherst College, Hampshire College, Mount Holyoke College. We have a wealth of musical activity, both in terms of composition and performance. And we're trying to figure out programs. We're just actually finalizing programs for this September's iteration of the festival. And I think a lot about wanting to make sure that we're offering the kind of opportunity for new music to be heard, and for people to, for the next generation or our generation, to figure out what's going to be of lasting significance and interest. And there's no way that can happen if that music isn't heard. So with my organizational hat, I think about this all the time. I also run a festival called Green Mountain Chamber Music Festival in the summer, which is for 200, and we have 220 students this summer. And I just finished the programming for that as well. And we've held a competition, call for scores for composers under 30. So I do feel that in my role now is to make sure I put some energy into making sure new music gets heard, so that in the 22nd century they will have something to look back on.
Is there anything else that you would like to mention about your album? Anything we haven't touched on at this point?
Well, I think that it's not that we haven't touched on this, but I just want to just return to the point that I think history is really important, and the events that were swirling around in that decade, where they changed the lives of most people on the planet. And I think that may be the case as well for what's going on now. And so I think, it's really instructive and enlightening to reflect on the past as we confront the future.
I do think the album's very successful, and you are very successful in conveying that overarching theme of history and legacy. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for taking us on that journey.
Okay, thank you so much, Mary Clark.